south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. You know, on the last show, I think it was the last show, I was talking about buying real estate from desperate sellers. Now, to review this for just a second, one of the best ways to find a desperate seller is to look for what they call a work in gray or obra in gris. In other words, you're driving around and you see a project that looks half finished or a third finished. It's all gray, not painted, of course, because there's no doors and windows and looks like there hasn't been a worker around in weeks, months maybe, maybe years. Well, that's what you call an obra in gris or work in gray. That means more often than not, there's a desperate seller behind that project. Of course, like I said many times, in Latin America, houses are built in fits and starts because those remises are coming back all the time from the States, and when they get a big chunk of dough coming in, a couple grand maybe, from Uncle Julio's cash-only gray market leaf-blowing service up in Cleveland. Then all of a sudden, a handful of workers show up at that project. Another room gets finished or the roof gets put on. Maybe, since sometimes the patriarch on the receiving end of those remises would rather buy a big-screen TV. Or maybe take his 15-year-old kid to a strip club and show him the ropes. I'm not kidding, that does happen, but that's a topic for another show. By the way, speaking of remises, if you're a gringo or expat down here in Latin America, you'll have a phone, of course, and you'll get text messages, and you won't be able to read them, probably because your Spanish sucks. Well, most long-term expats, including me, can read them because we have our Spanish down. Kinda. And I gotta tell you about the text messages I just got on my phone today. Let me read it to you, I'll translate. It says, are you worried about your remises getting to you on time? Are you worried your remises won't get sent securely and safely? Well, don't fret. Your Claro and Tigo phone services have just joined up with MoneyGram, along with Banco BC, Citibank, and BAC, and Banco Continental. And now, you can receive your U.S. remises instantly by internet. Then it has contact reply information here. So anyway, any of you guys and gals up there in the States who want to send me remises, now you can send them to me directly from the States by Tigo or Claro phone through one of those banks using MoneyGram. So do send those remises to me on time. I'm counting on them. I got a work in gray I got to finish, and obra in gris. No, just kidding, but you get the point. Remises are big business, huge business, and they're funding a lot of these real estate projects in the bubble. And like I said, you're never going to find one of these obras in Greece on the internet. You have to be driving around and getting your boots on the ground to see that kind of stuff. And you know, sometimes there'll be a sign that says, se vende, means for sale. And sometimes they'll even say, ganga, which means very cheap. Ganga. And here's a memory aid for you. Think Lady Ganga. Now, if that doesn't conjure up very cheap and trashy for you, nothing will. Now, note that most gringos and expats want to build or buy in a gated, guarded community. You know, with a condo or homeowners committee and all that stuff, so you can make your own rules. Unless, of course, you want to have some rural acreage and a spread out in the county with ducks, horses, chickens, and outhouses and stuff. But most expats and gringos aren't on that trajectory. Though I know a few who are. So that's one possibility. Anyway, so now I'm talking basically to you guys and gals out there who want a little piece of real estate. And the best bet then is to check inside some of these gated communities. But you don't want to pay bubble prices. That would be nuts. And note, the nicest ones are slightly out of the city in what you might call the burbs now. Used to be the boonies some years ago. But what you're seeing is hundreds, if not thousands, of guarded gated communities with big lots with plenty of land. A lot of trees, great views. They're, of course, part and parcel of the real estate bubble too. But I can tell you this. In almost every single guarded gated community like that, you'll find one or more of these works in gray, these obras en gris I'm talking about. Now, that's not to say there aren't gated, guarded communities with tiny little lots and your living room windows facing into someone's garage. A lot of that stuff out there, too. Nice to rent for a few months when you first get down, but you really don't want to live there permanently. So let's say you're coming down here on a real estate scouting mission and you hooked up with someone like John Galt, who will get you together with a bilingual translator slash Girl Friday from his expat concierge service. Or maybe you've located your own bilingual helper slash assistant. Either way, let's say your mission is to find some of these works in gray, obras en gris, to possibly put in a very low ball bid. Now, of course, these are almost always cash deals, and that's how you can really beat the price down, but some sellers are so desperate they'll even take payments. Of course, your Latin lawyer is going to have to work out that deal for you and set up an airtight contract in your favor and such. Anyway, doing that show last week about desperate sellers and obras in gris, that's works in gray, you wouldn't believe how many emails that show generated. Now, just to clear things up, some of those obras in gris will have for sale signs on them. But more often than not, they won't. So how do you find the owner to put in a lowball bid? Well, you just ask the guard at the gate. And generally, he'll be more than glad to give you, a gringo, it's your gringo advantage again, the phone number and email and whatever data he's got on the homeowner, or propietario. Propietario means property owner. If you're looking for real estate, you'll have to know that word, propietario. Now, if you write it out, you'll see it's got the word property in it, so it's easy to remember. Propietario. Though not as easy to remember as Lady Ganga, which is, as we know, synonymous with cheap and trashy. So then, from the happy, smiling guard, you get the name, the phone number, and maybe the email of the proprietario, the desperate seller, on that obra in gris. That's when you let your bilingual translator call the guy and find out what he wants. Because you don't want the owner, the proprietario, to know you're a gringo, and we'll talk a bit more about that later. Now, if you're really interested, that's the time you get a hold of an architect to have a look at it and see what it would take to get it done. And that's when you mention your own ideas about the additions and subtractions you want on your final dream house. So that can be figured into the mix too. Oh, and by the way, I got some emails from astute gringos asking me if it would not be a good business for a gringo to search out those obras in gris, buy them up or put options on them, then make a business out of selling them to gringos who are coming down looking for property. Well, interesting concept, I thought, but I don't think it's going to fly because, remember, we're in a big real estate bubble, and those obras in gris and distressed properties are popping up more and more, meaning more on the market, less demand, so why would you want to get involved on the down end of that slope? My suggestion, scout out desperate sellers for properties you want to live in. Again, you have to get boots on the ground. You're not going to find any of this stuff on the internet. However, if you come down to my July Expat Insider Seminar, you'll learn all about that step-by-step process because we do a whole day on real estate, half day in the classroom, half day boots on the ground. Remember, you still got about a week to sign up and get the $500 per person early bird discount. On May 1st, it goes back to the regular price. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com, click on Johnny's 2016 Latin American Seminar link on the top of the page, and you'll get all the info and pricing. And also, while you're at the newexpat.com website, do check out John Galt's optional pre- and post-seminar trips. Because if you're going to come down all that way, you're going to want to have some really great things to do and get your boots on the ground in as many cool places as you can. And John Galt, well, he knows his way around. And you know, people who took his pre- and post-seminar trip last time say, you'll never come across a better tour guide slash conversationalist slash handholder than John Galt. And he's an absolute volcano of expat information. But we were talking about desperate sellers now, right? So anyway, my advice is when you find a desperate owner, don't think about flipping it or selling it or fixing it up and putting it on the market. Think about buying it, fixing it up, and keeping it for yourself. That should be part of your plan B and part of your foothold position in Latin America. I know a lot of you are thinking about permanently relocating some of those assets you've got up in the States. They have to go somewhere, don't they? And they're not safe in either U.S. real estate or U.S. banks. Not anymore, and you got to wonder what those pus-brained politicians are going to think of to skin us next. By the way, the word politics is a combination of two Greek words. The word poly, meaning many, and tix, meaning blood-sucking insects. Did you know that assets like gold and silver and cash are not even safe from bony-ass, dead-broke Uncle Sam in a bank safety deposit vault? Yep, some banks won't even let you put that stuff in their boxes anymore. And the ones who will report it to the IRS. So again, when you come down, you're going to want to rent at first, at least for 6 months. But in that time, you just keep your eyes open for desperate sellers. And if your idea is to build, well, you find desperate sellers who are selling land. And if your idea is to buy a house that's complete, there are plenty of desperate sellers out there with brand new empty houses they've been trying to sell or rent for months, even years. Again, you have to have boots on the ground to see this kind of stuff. So anyway, after I ran that show about desperate sellers last week, I got a ton of email. A lot from people asking just how to find those desperate sellers, and some people wrote in who are expats, mostly long-term expats who've built houses and bought properties, confirming exactly what I've been saying. In fact, right now I want to read you an email from such a gringo who's living down in Colombia, who's been through much the same thing. Listen to this, and I'll paraphrase a bit here. Starts out, "Johnny, I'm a new aficionado and very much enjoying your show. After listening to your last few shows on Latin American real estate, I thought I'd send this out for you and your listeners. Now, I'm a gringo, but I'm kind of the exception to the rule. I'm a retired U.S. cop, married now to a Colombian gal for 10 years. I'm fluent in Spanish now, with 30 years practicing the language. I've got some bilingual kids, etc., and we speak both languages in the home. By the way, I'm also Native American / Caucasian, so I don't look too much different than anyone else in Colombia when I'm down there. So I slide under the radar easily. We bought our retirement home in San Gil, Colombia in 2009. I've posted some pictures for you here, and feel free to use them as you wish. You know what, Mike? I will. I'll put them on the YouTube. So I hope you all go to YouTube and check that out later. Anyway, he says, about the house. After a year and a half of negotiation, after dealing with mierda and lawyers and more negotiations, etc., I bought it. And yes, Johnny, it was an obra in Greece, and I paid $40,000 for it, including the land. Cash and carry, baby. That's what us gringos like to do down south, and everyone appreciates it. Then he says, I finished the house the way I wanted for an additional $30,000. So, with $70,000 from start to finish and 2,100 square foot, 4 bedrooms, 3 baths with a terraza on top and a separate lot on the side of the house, we got our dream home. Wait a minute, just a second. It's me again. I have to interrupt here because if you figure the numbers on Mike's house, he's 2,100 square feet, at $70,000, that's about $33 a square foot. But it's really not. It's much cheaper because remember, it's including the land here. So then let's say, conservatively, the land's worth $25,000. Remember, he's got 2 lots now. That means Mike built his dream home for around $21 to $22 a square foot. So, for all you naysayers out there who sent me emails saying, Johnny, I don't think this is possible, that's when I was talking about being able to construct the first world house for $25 to $35 a square foot. So here's what I say to you doubters out there. I say just remain relaxed on that sofa in Cleveland and come up with some other excuses not to come down and get your plan B moving. Then Mike says, and of course, this is Latin America, so we went through the lesson with the Colombian mañana time with workers and contractors, etc. Si, senor, be there at 2 o'clock sharp on Tuesday. Then show up 4 p.m. on Thursday and can't understand why I'm pissed. Hell, I'm a gringo. That's why I'm pissed. And then come the excuses. Señor, pero qué? And you know, it's me again. You hear that all the time. Pero qué? Qué? Meaning what? Like, what's up, man? What's wrong? I made it. I'm here. Calmate. Tranquilo. Relajarte. Oh, I love those three words. Tranquilo means be tranquil. Relajarte means relax. And calmate means stay calm. Meaning, when you're trying to get something done down here in Latin America, let's say you want your refrigerator repaired, or you're building a garage or a house or something, those are the three words and phrases you'll most commonly hear. Relajarte, calmate, and tranquilo. Oh, and don't forget that fourth phrase you'll hear all the time, no problemo, which many times means just the opposite. But back to Mike's email. He says, Johnny, on the upside, I have ceramic stone floors, handmade custom hardwood cabinets and doors, wrought iron handrails, a very nice house, complete with all those goofy little lack of attention to detail items you're talking about all the time. Normal for any project like this, I suppose. My point is, with boots on the ground, my Spanish ability, and experience in real estate, we smacked that bad boy out for around $30 a square foot. He's talking about the whole project there now. But there's more. As you might imagine, the transferring of funds from the U.S. to Colombia was a real joy. My U.S. bank was very curious why I wanted to wire $40,000 to Colombia. I ended up wiring it to Bancolombia branch in Miami. Then the money went to my builder's notary, my wife, and brother-in-law there, and was confirmed via BlackBerry. It felt more like the emotional roller coaster of a drug deal than a real estate deal. But it all turned out, and everyone went to lunch afterward. Now get this, Johnny, the house has tripled in value since 2009, and the property taxes have gone up too, to $600 a year. Yep, it's very nice, and though there are a lot of tourists now passing through San Gil, Colombia, we are pretty much off the gringo tourist trail and hardly meet anyone who speaks English, which is just so nice. That's all for now. P.S. Now here's a big P.S., folks. He says, did I mention, if you're a gringo with no boots on the ground and no Spanish, your gringo prices will start at double. Keep it up, Johnny. Signed, Miguelito. That's little Mike. Oh, and by the way, any Spanish word that has ito on the end, that's I-T-O, it's a term of endearment meaning little. Though it could mean little as in short or small, like carrito. That means a small car. Or it could mean junior. For example, if there's two Mikes in the family, one could be Miguel and one could be Miguelito. But where was I? Oh, yeah. There's an email that brings up a lot of different points. A guy who transferred money down from the States, and you saw how that went. A guy who bought from a desperate seller with an incomplete house, a work in gray. A guy who's seeing what the gringo tourist trail is doing to his adopted country. Gringo prices at double what he can pay. Not to mention the real estate bubble that's pumped his house value up 300% in 7 years. Talks about the contractors and the lack of attention to detail, etc., etc. But how in the end he is super satisfied and got pretty much everything he wanted out of the deal. So you can see how you could do it too. Now, I know what you're thinking. He's married to a Colombian girl and he speaks fluent Spanish. Although it's not necessary to marry a Latino or a Latina, once you get down here, you gotta get started working on your Spanish. So imagine you came down and you spent 6 months renting, which is highly recommended, of course, before you buy anything. And in that time, you study Spanish, pick it up more and more, hook up with a bilingual translator / concierge person, and start scouting out those nice neighborhoods where you want to live, keeping a close eye out for desperate sellers. In fact, I know of a half dozen works in gray that I could drive by in 10 or 15 minutes from where I'm doing this show right now. And that's not to mention the desperate sellers I see here and there on supermarket bulletin boards who can't even afford to advertise their properties in the paper. And of course, there are the local newspaper classified ad sections where you'll spot desperate sellers here and there too. But as you know, or maybe you don't, desperate sellers have had their properties up for sale or rent for so long with no takers that oftentimes they just quit advertising. Just like the chronically unemployed up in the States just fall off the rolls and the government doesn't count them anymore. And U.S. unemployment's at 5%, right? So when desperate sellers get really desperate, they don't buy ads in the paper anymore. That costs money. And of course, they've listed their properties all over the place with Remax and Century 21 and all the local agencies. But, you know, after a place hasn't had one hit in over a year, they get relegated to the back of the file cabinet. And of course, you know, real estate agents, they're always pushing their pet projects. And down here in Latin America, in places where the bubble is huge, real estate agents have been getting caught in their own frenzy. They bought up properties, tried to flip them and stuff. And now many of them have pet projects that they're invested in themselves. So they're frantic to show you that crap first. You get the picture. Oh, and here's something that's going to blow your mind. If you don't think there's a huge real estate bubble here in Latin America, just drive along one of the big sections of highway in a nicer section of town and you'll see all kinds of billboards popping up everywhere advertising first world real estate projects people wouldn't have dreamed of seeing down here even 5 years ago. And how about this? Over the years, I've been monitoring these giant billboard ads and I noticed a couple of them that kind of tell the history of the real estate bubble story in a nutshell. Of course, that's not what their intention is, but you judge for yourself. Now, if you were down here with boots on the ground, I could show you some very big, expensive billboards on the Pan American Highway. You know, the biggest highway in all Latin America. It goes from Alaska down to Panama. And believe me, if you have a business or a project or a housing development, you want to put up a billboard there because that's where all the traffic is. Now, along that highway, there's some very nasty neighborhoods and bad pieces of real estate, a lot of farmland, and some very, very upscale pieces of real estate, too. Now, I've been watching this one development and their giant poster ads with great interest because about a year and a half ago when the project was just about done, big billboards started popping up. And by the way, the houses started at around $200,000 and up. So at first, a year and a half ago when the billboards first went up, They were asking 20% down, and it said so right on the billboard. By the way, a down payment here is called enganche in Spanish. Okay, so a year and a half ago, 20% down. That's 40 grand up front, minimum, right? Now, I know this upscale subdivision, and I drive by at night sometimes, and there's almost no lights on, so things are not going well. They're not selling. So then, about a year ago, the billboard signs on the Pan American Highway started changing. Same upscale first world subdivision, but now only 10% down. That means minimum 20 grand up front, right? Okay, fast forward to about a month ago. I'm driving along again, see those same billboards, they're being changed. Yep, they still say 10% enganche, that's 10% down. However, it says you can pay the 10% down in 12 easy monthly payments. Wait a minute. To me, that's no down payment. A down payment is cash up front, and they're letting you finance the down payment. Does that make sense? Have you ever heard of that? I mean, you have a down payment, so you can prove to the lender or the housing development, which might be self-financing, that you're good to pay the payments, right? You have to put skin in the game then and there. But if you can't even come up with the down payment and have to pay that in payments, well, what does that tell you? Talk about creative financing, huh? So then you might ask, why not just drop it to 0% down? Well, that's the next step. And I'm seeing that happen all over the place too, where initially there was 20% down, then they dropped it to 10, then 5 sometimes, or straight to zero money down. Does that remind you of anything? Shades of 2006, 7, and 8 maybe? Who knows? Maybe the next step is to do like they do with car loans in the States. No money down and waive the interest for a year or two. So with that information, if you doubt there's a real estate bubble down here ready to blow, come on down and buy into it. Hey, there's a ton of upscale projects you can get into down here with no money down. But back to our desperate sellers. Like I said, you're not going to find them on the internet. And you're not going to find them by calling up Century 21 or REMAX or any of the local real estate agents. Look what Mike said about Colombia. If you can't speak Spanish and you're a gringo, you'll pay gringo prices which start at twice what the locals pay. So then you might ask, why do desperate sellers often advertise on supermarket bulletin boards? Because that's one place they let you advertise for free. And desperate sellers, well, they haven't got any cash. That's why they're desperate. Oh, and here's another way to find desperate sellers. When you're driving around and you see for sale signs, that's se vende in Spanish. Just pay attention as to how dilapidated the sign is. Because, you know, when a sign first goes up, it's brand spanking new and nice and straight and glistening and shiny. But after 6 months, 8 months, 10 months, a year, year and a half, 2 years, well, the sign loses its luster, starts tipping, gets sunbaked, cracked, and often loaded with bird shit. Now, desperate sellers being, well, desperate, they do not, as a rule, buy new signs, clean them up, or repaint them. This is Latin America, you know. Details, details. So you can watch the signs deteriorate along with the real estate. And here's a tip. Do pay attention to the gardening or lack of gardening, too. Another telltale sign of a desperate seller. Okay, let's move on. How about another expat, third world, off the gringo tourist trail story that could make you crack a smile or shed a tear, depending? Now, the other day I was talking to John Galt and he said something funny happened. He was in a very upscale shopping center at a very nice restaurant, and he saw some people who were dining like they were royalty that happened to be connected to the U.S. Embassy. No surprise there. And as John Galt will sometimes do, he weaseled his way into the conversation, as I often try to do myself, gathering as much information from the enemy as we can. Anyway, gently probing into what they were doing down here in Latin America under U.S. government contract, he found they were down here acting as high-level administrators, fighting the war on drugs that was lost a long time ago, in fact, before it even started. And as it turned out, they were talking about how the U.S. spends a few hundred billion, with a B, dollars a year in Latin America alone, continuously fighting that lost war. And then John Galt said to me, I just don't get it. Where's that money going? I don't see any improvements anywhere. Do you? We figured it just went into one big, infinitely corrupt black hole and left the question hanging. However, just a day or two later, I ran into an old buddy of mine, Motorcycle Mike, who you might remember was the focus of a story I told maybe 3 or 4 years ago on the show. A guy who's the Central American maintenance manager for a huge U.S. helicopter firm. Anyway, I hadn't seen him for a couple of years, and I knew he hangs around San Salvador, the capital of El Salvador, because he's got a beautiful condo there in the Zona Rosa. So anyway, I saw Motorcycle Mike. They call him that because he's a big Harley driver, tattoos and all. Ex-Marine, muscles on top of muscles. Hell of a nice guy. When I asked him what he's been doing, he said for the last year he's been in and out of airports all over Latin America. But mostly, he said, at the airports in Mexico and Peru. He said, you see, the U.S. had donated 100 or so brand new helicopters to certain Latin countries to fight that oh-so-successful drug war. And then he says, you know, when the U.S. donates equipment like that, somebody's got to get the maintenance contract, and that was me and my company. That's when he made the ugliest face I had ever seen him make in my life, and he can make ugly faces. And then he said, Johnny, don't ever sign a contract with a Latin American government, because you know what? I spent over a year going back and forth from airport to airport, and guess what? We had a contract, but never got paid. And it was such a big cascade of screw-ups, we never will either. So, from what I could gather, he and his crew got paid for expenses along the way, but never got the big chunk of dough that was written into the contract. I said, Mike, are you telling me that the U.S. reneged on a contract? He said, no, that was part of the cascade of screw-ups. The U.S. donated the helicopters, but the Latin countries were on the hook for the maintenance contracts. So Big Mike got stiffed in a big way. And you might remember from another past Expat Files show, I mentioned how I got stiffed by a Latin government in a much smaller way. I got stiffed after doing a radio voiceover for a government tourist program that got played over and over on Latin American air flights. Now, I mentioned that story to Mike, but it didn't make him feel much better. So, what's the point? Well, remember I said that John Galt mentioned a few $100 billion donated to Latin countries each year to fight that war? The war that every idiot, cretin, and geek knew we lost a long time ago? Now, we were wondering where all that money went, right? So, let's take 100 military helicopters, for instance. They come in at around 10 to 25 million bucks apiece. Then you've got tens of millions of dollars worth of replacement parts at every airport. Then there's the training and support staff, and all those government and military pus-brained wonks flying back and forth first class, staying in four-star hotels, and eating at upscale restaurants on your dime. Because that's what high-level government administrators and contractors do, especially down here in the third world where it's out of sight, out of mind. So the question is, after hearing all that, did you crack a smile or shed a tear?
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.